This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Police and aid groups say more than 60% of illegal prostitutes in Belgium are trafficked from Nigeria. Many are only teenagers and almost all come from Benin City, a city in the south of Nigeria.
That's Martha van der Wolf reporting from Brussels. Details coming up. Also, unless emergency assistance continues, more than 20,000 children in Somalia will face starvation in the next few months. And Egyptians are feeling the harsh effects of economic reforms today as the government announced sharply higher fuel prices. We have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, an aid group is warning that more than 20,000 children in Somalia will face starvation in the next few months unless emergency assistance continues. Save the Children country director Hassan Nur Said says recent rains have been erratic and not enough to end the drought. He says families continue to lose what little remains of their livelihoods and livestock. Save the Children says cases of severe acute malnutrition, which it calls the most dangerous form of hunger, have skyrocketed in 9 Somali districts. It says there are famine-like conditions in some areas of the country. A $1.5 billion humanitarian appeal has been issued for Somalia. About $550 million has been received so far. Drought is also affecting neighboring Kenya. The latest UN assessment warns that people needing assistance could rise from 2.6 million today to 3.5 million by August. It says nearly 344,000 children and 37,000 pregnant and lactating women are actually malnourished. Egyptians are feeling the harsh effects of economic reforms today as the government announced sharply higher fuel prices. The government has cut subsidies, causing fuel prices to rise by 55% and propane by 100%. Prime Minister Sharif Ismail says the subsidies were a strain on the budget. The cuts are part of conditions set by the International Monetary Fund in exchange for a $12 billion loan. The government had increased fuel prices in 2014 and again last November. Italy is threatening to stop vessels carrying rescued migrants from docking at its ports. More than 70,000 have arrived so far this year, more than any other country. Officials say resources are being strained, warning that migrants may have to be housed in army barracks and tents. Italy wants the European Union to have rescue vessels dock in other countries to ease the burden. One official says that would prevent the humanitarian emergency from becoming a humanitarian tragedy. The EU is asking Italy to delay any decisions until members have time to discuss it. It's offering Italy financial aid, but says it wants ample warning before any rescue ships are turned away. Police and aid groups say more than 60% of illegal prostitutes in Belgium are trafficked from Nigeria. Many are only teenagers and almost all come from Benin City, a city in the south of Nigeria. Martha van der Wolf reports from Brussels that trying to get the girls out of prostitution is a challenge.
Rosa was sexually exploited by Nigerian traffickers and had to prostitute herself on the streets of Spain, Norway, France and Belgium. But Belgian police saved her after 2 years.
The police took me, they asked me a question if I want to talk. If when I talk, they are going to make it a better way for me, to make me to be okay. They will give me documents. I say yes, I will talk because the stress is too much.
Rosa, not her real name, was struggling in Nigeria making ends meet for her and her daughter. She was told she could marry a man in Europe. After crossing Morocco and reaching Spain by boat, she was told to pay a $55,000 debt and forced into prostitution. Europol said last year that Nigerian human trafficking rings are one of the biggest challenges for European police forces. Police now see those who were trafficked as victims, whether they have documents or not. After speaking to the Belgian police, Rosa ended up in Payoke, a shelter for victims of sexual exploitation. There are three similar shelters in Belgium. Payoke has helped at least 4,000 women and witnessed a rise in Nigerian women from the early 1990s. Payoke founder Patsy Sørensen says the shelter only helps victims who agree to file charges against the traffickers.
The reason also that we ask their cooperation is that we like to fight also against the traffickers. It's a win-win situation also for them. When they cooperate, we are able to offer them a lot of things so that they are able to start a new life.
A court case usually takes about 2 to 3 years. In that time, the shelter helps the girl get her life organized, and after 5 years, the victims can apply for Belgian citizenship. Police Commissioner Frans van der Loek says another big challenge is that most Nigerian illegal prostitutes end up trafficking and exploiting other girls once they have paid off their debt, meaning they will no longer be seen as a victim.
They know very well what they have suffered in the past. And of course, at a certain moment, they decide to transform themselves to a madame, too, because of the money, of course. And they need money to feed the family who is still in Nigeria. So I can understand the situation, but in our society, in our European society, we can't accept the situation.
Sørensen of Payoke says the women still face many challenges once they have decided to start a new life. Their family in Nigeria still needs money, their health is often a concern, many are still scared of the traffickers, and they often feel lonely while dealing with their traumatic experiences. Rosa says when she started the court procedures, friends of the traffickers in Nigeria would beat her mother so badly she needed hospital treatment. Despite the challenges, Rosa feels it was worth it.
I can say now I'm very happy now because I'm getting a good life now. Yeah, because before I was having a lot of stress, but now my stress is coming down every day. I can really see that I'm very okay now.
The International Organization for Migration says last year about 37,000 Nigerians arrived by boat in Europe, about one-third of them women. It is estimated more than 8,000 of them will end up in prostitution. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Brussels.
22 years ago in Nigeria, 9 Ogoni activists were hanged by the military for allegedly inciting violence that led to the deaths of several Ogoni elders. Among those executed was author and playwright Keno Sarowiwa. Supporters say the 9 actually were targeted because they protested environmental damage done by Shell Oil in Ogoniland. The executions on phony charges caused an international backlash against the dictatorship. Now, the widows of 4 of the activists have filed a civil suit against Shell. They are demanding a public apology and compensation. The lawsuit has been filed at The Hague. Shell says it has always denied, in the strongest possible terms, the allegations made by the plaintiffs in the tragic case. In northeastern Nigeria, Boko Haram-related violence has driven hundreds of thousands of people from their homes. Some are now returning. Many are farmers whose land has been plundered or left unattended. Now the UN Food and Agriculture Organization is helping to resettle them by distributing seeds and fertilizers to vulnerable farmers in 3 northeastern Nigerian states, Adamawa, Borno, and Yobe. It's part of a larger $230 million initiative to support all displaced people in the countries of the Lake Chad Basin, including Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. Ms. Kombas is the head of the FAO sub-regional team for sub-regional resilience in West Africa and the Sahel. She explained to reporter William Eagle that the effort is distributing to northern Nigeria 2,000 tons of cereals, pulses, and vegetable seeds to those in need.
We're thinking of kopi, maize, millet, sorghum, vegetable seeds are all provided to those IDPs, returnees, and host communities. We also have a mix of seeds adapted to local customs, planting, and consumption habits, like millet, for example, as well as crops that can be both consumed by beneficiary families and to be sold on markets like kopis, because the idea is not only to produce what they can consume, but if they have surplus, they could eventually sell to local markets and generate some income.
Are these GMO seeds, and also are they high yielding and resistant to drought and other climate conditions?
These are certified seeds. We're not talking of GMO, certified seeds, and particularly that are adapted to local custom, planting, and consumption habits. We're not talking of seeds coming from elsewhere. We're talking of traditional seeds used and very high quality to make sure that they can have good harvest.
Ms. So, when are the crops likely to be harvested?
We are in the planting season right now, but the harvest will start in October. And if the rain pattern is normal to good, the production should cover the family's food needs for 5 to 6 months.
Do you have any concern that some families may be so hungry that they might consume the seeds themselves rather than plant them?
That's why we're collaborating with the World Food Program to make sure that the farmers that we are targeting with kits, with seeds, fertilizers, are also provided by the World Food Program with food rations that they can use for direct consumption. This ensures immediate hunger needs are addressed, and at the same time, we are making sure that future harvest will take place.
How is this effort to provide seeds and fertilizer likely to affect women?
For us, let's say that hunger eradication, building food security, resilience, we can't do it without making sure that women and men are provided equal chances in agriculture and food production, and making sure that vulnerable women are protected. They are receiving also social protection. FAO is proposing several activities that are addressing gender issues, promoting agriculture as a more attractive livelihood option for boys and men, to help alleviate in a way the daily burden of women who often work in the fields and at the same time take care of their family on their own, supporting women in getting in the higher level of the value chain, marketing, producing, producer cooperatives, making sure that they are also in the part that is making profit, not only the production, but if you look at the whole value chain, starting from production, but also getting to the upstream level of the value chain. The first thing that we can do right now to make sure that those women are getting more than only production is to make sure that they can access local markets, for example, to make sure that they not only produce, but they also have surpluses that they can sell. This is part of the value chain.
This is currently a short-term measure, but you do have a long-term response, which includes investments in agriculture, rural development, and natural resource management. What are some of the investments in agriculture and rural development that you would hope to be seen in the long term versus this short-term emergency?
As we strengthen the capacities of the institutions at local level, at community level, for the management of productive resources, as well as the promotion of sustainable management of land use, pasture, water resources, those are all the many things that we have to do to make sure that we are not responding only to a current crisis. And indeed, FAO is working with governments of the 4 affected countries, again, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria, to engage into recovery and development processes at the local and national level.
Ms. Kumbaso is the head of the FAO sub-regional team for sub-regional resilience in West Africa and the Sahel. She was speaking to reporter William Eagle. You were listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Tens of millions of people around the world have been displaced by war, drought, and natural disasters like storms and earthquakes. But a new study warns by the year 21,000, up to 2 billion people could become climate change migrants and refugees. VOA's Jody Kapowa reports.
Rising global temperatures are melting ice caps and glaciers. At the same time, they're heating the oceans, causing them to expand and rise. A Cornell University study says that's bad news for those living along coastlines over the next 80 years or so. In fact, it's bad news for just about everybody. It says coastal residents will be displaced, and they'll have a difficult time finding new places to live. Study lead author Charles Geisler is professor emeritus of development sociology. He says seas will rise fast, but not affect all regions at the same time in the same way.
It's not going to be a slow creep. It's going to come in large pulses. We're going to get storms that are irregular, more and more typhoons, tornadoes, hurricanes, onshore battering, if you will.
To make matters worse, he says, there'll be major ocean surges.
You could almost call them tidal wave effects. Moving that water inland, it's going to put salt in aquifers. It's going to salinize the most fertile lands on the planet, which are those of deltas and low elevation coastal zones. And it's going to wreak havoc on real estate and structures, infrastructure, much of which is also concentrated on coastal zones.
Geisler says there'll be a lot less land available for a growing world population. It's expected to reach at least 9 billion by 2050. What's more, popular beach and recreation areas will be submerged. President Trump could be directly affected by the coming changes at Mar-a-Lago, a Trump company beach resort and club.
Our current president is among the many people living in South Florida, which is probably the most at-risk place outside of Louisiana and the Mississippi Delta in the United States.
In the past, President Trump has called climate change a hoax, and more recently announced the U.S. will pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Professor Geisler lists some of the areas outside the U.S. threatened by rising seas.
Bangladesh is the poster child of sea level rise. It's basically a country that is entirely on a delta, and that delta is being lost rather rapidly. The same is true of the Mekong Delta, the southern third of Vietnam. 18 million people inhabit the Mekong, and they're going to have to move inland probably over the course of the next 80 years, I would say a century, possibly a century and a half.
The Chinese coast is very vulnerable, not just because of sea level rise, but also because of what Geisler calls subsidence. It occurs when land caves in as groundwater is depleted.
All along the Chinese coast, there are major metropolitan developments. They are drawing down their groundwater, sometimes reducing the surface of the land by as much as 18 to 20 feet. So you've got an additional serious situation, and that'll be true in other parts of the world. But Asia is going to be hit first and hardest.
In Africa, a vitally important region could also succumb to sea rise.
The Nile Delta is going to be hit extremely hard and has heavy population concentration, unlike much of the rest of Africa.
Some island nations are also at risk of submerging. Geisler says one country that's been holding back the sea for centuries, the Netherlands, is already hard at work getting ready for the next challenge. As the oceans encroach on land over the next 80 years or so, people will look to resettle inland. But the Cornell University study warns of resettlement roadblocks.
There's all kinds of them. Think about war. For the last 200 years, there have been 300 wars of record and many that are not recorded. War is pretty much an ongoing condition on the planet, and we can shrug and say that's human nature, or we can say, oh my God, that actually makes a lot of inland landscapes uninhabitable, at least on a temporary basis.
Wars can leave land contaminated, such as with the defoliant Agent Orange in Vietnam, or landmines in Cambodia, Angola, and Mozambique. Wars can also exhaust natural resources. Other resettlement blocks include desertification, urban sprawl, private gated communities that bar outsiders, and expanding highways. Two of the major ways to deal with rising oceans are sea barriers, giant walls to protect cities like New York, and national relocation strategies. Officials in four counties in the U.S. state of Florida are working together to develop plans now. But Professor Geisler says that ultimately, the answer lies in reducing and holding the line on greenhouse gas emissions, fueling the rise in temperatures. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
New research suggests that the ability of children in Africa to perform well in school could be dramatically improved through the provision of basic malaria education and treatment. While less fatal among older children, malaria infections often impact on a child's ability to concentrate, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
Most malaria prevention programs focus on the under fives. Many older school children continue to harbor malaria parasites without displaying any symptoms of the disease. Left untreated, the child's health often deteriorates, says lead researcher Dr. Sean Clark of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
The malaria parasites destroy the red blood cells, and as a consequence of that, you get chronic anemia in children. Generally, children who are anemic feel weak, they're tired, they're generally lethargic, they're going to be less active and less fully engaged.
The research involved nearly 2,000 school children in Mali, led by Save the Children and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, alongside the National Institute for Public Health Research in Mali. Around half the children were given a malaria control package delivered by their teachers, which included prevention education, insecticide-treated nets, and anti-malarial treatment. Malaria infection rates fell from 80% to just 5%, and cases of anemia were almost halved compared to the control group. Again, Dr. Clark.
And the children's capacity to pay attention for longer was increased.
Save the Children has helped expand the program to 400 schools in Mali. It is the second African country to host the trial.
So the first study was done in Kenya, an area of year-round transmission. The study was done in Mali, an area with malaria concentrated in just a few months. And the fact that we saw similar results in both settings would suggest that where malaria is a significant problem and the levels of infection are high, then you might expect to see similar impact in other settings.
Aid workers say preventing anemia in Malian schoolgirls is particularly important because of high teenage marriage and pregnancy rates. Anemia during pregnancy can lead to a low birth weight and a higher risk of child mortality. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
This is our moment. Together with footballers like Steven Pienaar, we are speaking out to end malaria.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Let's do it.
United, we can beat malaria.